This topic today is going to definitely be in flux. I don't have all the information. I just find it so intriguing. I think there's maybe on the news feed probably about 12 different articles that I've read over the last week and a half. And it's referring to a fungal infection that is completely out of control. It can't be stopped. It seems to be resistant to all the strong antifungals that they give it. But they just cannot get this under control. I read one story, and I can't remember the country. It might have been in London. Great Britain, United Kingdom. You knew what I meant. But London would be in Great Britain. But they said an individual went from a nursing home facility to a healthcare facility. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was something to deal with a ingrown toenail. Well, the procedure went well, but the problem was when the person left the hospital, they took back to the nursing home facility with them a type of a fungal infection that just cannot be resolved. It's a fungus called Candida auris. Sometimes I catch myself sounding like a broken record, but I was telling a woman yesterday, no, I think it was the day before, that the number one predictor of a chronic infection that never resolves and never goes away, and it's not the only factor, it's just one of them, is going to be how much refined sugar a person consumes. I'm not trying to throw everything toward that, but I just want you to consider that when you have a fungal infection or a bacterial infection, or your immune system is run down, and you just cannot quite get over the hump to get your strength back or get well, we might want to do something radical, like thinking about cutting out the refined carbohydrates and sugar. Well, I started to give you a lot of information about this new infection that's just completely taking over everything, but everywhere on the globe. But I thought to myself, you know what? Why don't you focus on more of a solution? And so there's a gentleman that I like very much. His name is Bill Sardi. I haven't met him in person, but I kind of feel like I know him just because I like to read his work. And Bill Sardi has a website called Knowledge of Health. But I want to just share with you a little bit of the research, and I just find it's just very, very intriguing. And let me see, where do I want to start right here? There is there's a microbiologist, which I'm going to admit, I always thought that microbiology was one of the most fascinating studies out of all the classes I've taken. I still remember Dr. Vernon Price in Athens, my instructor. I really think that because of his inspiration, what a great guy. Somebody told me not that long ago that he was still teaching. That is just phenomenal. Way to go, Dr. Price. But there was his name is Jacques Mies. He's a microbiologist in the Netherlands. He made an observation that there is a very common antifungal drug. It's called itraconazole. And obviously, it's prescribed when somebody has a fungal infection. One possible fungal infection that you could come down with is called aspergillus. But he goes on to say that this particular antifungal drug that's used to treat human beings with a fungal infection is basically a molecular copy of a common pesticide. These are called azole pesticides, A-Z-O-L-E. And these are weed killers. Just think in your mind. Use your imagination. You are driving down the interstate. You are heading east on I-20. And on either side of the highway, you have crops. Maybe corn is on one side. Maybe cotton is on the other. Soybeans, milo, something like that. But have you ever seen like a crop duster come down like it's making a bombing run over the highway, but it's not a bombing run? Well, it is a bombing run. And then they turn those sprayers on, and from the wings of a airplane, oh my goodness, this thick mist comes flowing down over the crop. But those are crop dusters. Well, I've seen that so many times, it's unbelievable. One time I was driving down I-20, and I thought, they're releasing the pesticide before they even get across the service road. I wonder how many cars were covered with it. But he notices, Dr. Jacques Mies, that where they see the greatest amount of fungal infections in human beings. It's where they sprayed this fungicide on crops. That cannot be a coincidence. And if I'm not mistaken, he has notified the Centers of Disease Control to tell him about this unique observation, which I'm certain is not unique. I might have been just a little bit sarcastic with that. Anyway, let me get you the punchline. And I know this story is going to unfold, and I'm going to try to do as much as I can to read. But why don't we just talk today about what would be a solution if your immune system is compromised and it cannot rise to the occasion to overcome infection? What is a human being to do? Well, Bill Sardi did a good job of locating an article called Journal of Clinical Biochemistry and Nutrition, Volume 64, Number 2, in the year 2019. So I'm guessing that's pretty fresh from the month of February. Let me just cover this right here. And I'm going to try to go through. You can't see the research I'm looking at on my phone right now. But to me, this is, I would like to believe that if you hear what I'm saying about this and you remember it, this might actually save your life one day. I would like to think that whatever information I give you is going to make a difference. You know, if I wanted to, we could focus on what are the top drugs to treat this infection and that infection. But the whole purpose of studying Candida auris is to come to terms with the drugs of last choice or last resort. They are not working any longer. So just consider this. I know that you've heard me say in the past before that maybe, and I know this is an oversimplification, but you know, it's good to remember things in a simple format. The cornerstone of your immune system is zinc. Your body has got to have zinc to function properly. So you tell me, what is going to happen to the health of a cell if it lacks the very thing that it needs for optimal function? Well, you're probably saying to yourself, there's probably a whole bunch of things that just are left undone, Dr. Morgan, and I'd say, I agree with you. So you mean to tell me that your cells and your immune system can't function or beat on all eight cylinders when you're lacking zinc? That's right. It is left compromised. And so zinc supplementation has been shown to exhibit very beneficial effects on many childhood illnesses. There was this study, and it comes from the Journal of Clinical Biochemistry and Nutrition, Volume 64, in case you want to read that. They took 724 children that were all in this pediatric intensive care unit. That means the kids have got problems. They didn't say laying on the couch, you know, eating a popsicle at home, watching cartoons. No. They're talking about a pediatric intensive care unit, you know, ICU. And what they did was, patients were placed, and when I say patients, I'm talking about little kids, children. They were either given zinc supplementation, which is 20 milligrams a day, and these were just kids, by the way. If it was an adult, I kind of thought to myself, I might go like 50 or 60 or even more for just a short season. Not forever, if it was an adult. So they were either given 20 milligrams of zinc or they were given a placebo. You may not know what a placebo is, but the placebo would be a pill or a capsule that looks like the zinc, but it doesn't have any zinc in it. And what they were treating these, what they were looking at is the existence of a type of a fungus called Candida. I don't even know how many forms of Candida there are. Probably at my last count, I found about 25 or 26 that were unique. And so the one that's taking over hospitals and is incurable as of this very moment was Candida auris, not Candida albicans. But so this existence of Candida in the blood and the urine was much lower in the group that received the zinc, and the death rate was reduced by 68%. Folks, I'm not trying to suggest to you that I'm the world's greatest statistician or at mathematics. I can do simple math just fine, just like you can. I love math. Calculus too? Not so much. But 68% reduction in death. Come on, that is a huge number. if there was a drug they could administer to every person that came in or was processed through the intensive care unit, and it said it could reduce death by 68%, well, folks, that drug would be plastered on the front of every billboard as you drive up and down the road. It would be on the nightly news every night. And people would be screaming, please give us this drug. So I think they had 366 children in this study that actually were part of the placebo group. I'm not going to try to talk about the ethics of that, but it's just the way it is. And so they said, how many of these 366 kids in intensive care have a candida infection? That's a fungal infection in the blood. And that number was 94. That's 25.7%. And so they looked to the ones that were taking 20 milligrams of zinc every day. And yes, it's true, I do need to read the study because I don't know how long they took it before they took this blood sample. But to me, this is very intriguing. So placebo group had 94 out of 366 children that had candida in the blood. Those that were taking zinc, there was only 64. I mean, that's 30 fewer children. To me, that's a goldmine right there. And so then they went to the urine. Did they find a candida infection in the urine of those in the placebo group? Well, that was 91, or 24.9% of them. And folks, I'll tell you this. It is not a good day when you have an infection that runs rampant in the blood and it's in the urine at the same time. That is not good. And so the children that were treated with the 20 milligrams of zinc, there was only 57 of them. So we've gone from 91 with urinary infections in the placebo group down to 57. That is statistically extremely significant. And so then they looked at the third category. Remember, these kids are in pediatric intensive care. And so those they actually had to treat with an antifungal because of a fungal infection, well, it was exactly 85 out of the placebo and only 41 of those that were treated with the zinc. And so then they looked at what is the length of treatment with an antibiotic. Well, those on the placebo, it was 10.2 days. So you can say it took them a week and a half to where they no longer required the antifungal drug. But those that were on antibiotic that had the zinc, only 6.2 days. Well, that's 4 days less. Then they went to look at how long do they have to stay in the intensive care unit? 16.1 days on the placebo versus those that had just a little bit of zinc. It was 10.7 days. That's like almost, I started to say almost a week, but that's more like 5 days. Then they looked at the numbers, and I hate these numbers, but it's just the way it is. They looked at the death rate of these precious children that were in the intensive care. Those that were on the placebo, meaning that it contained no zinc, 29 of the 366 kids died, and 17 of those taking zinc. So I am not trying to pretend that this was a panacea. But I promise you this, zinc is able to move the needle. Back in 1996, they reported in one journal that malnourished children experience a shrinkage. Sometimes it's called an involution. I don't know if the word atrophy is the same thing, but it's pretty doggone close. The largest gland that you have in your immune system is called the thymus gland. I ask people all the time, I say, have you ever heard of the thymus gland? They'd say, I've heard of the thyroid, but nobody knows. Well, no, there's plenty of people out there, but there's some they have never heard even the word thymus. But this is hands down the largest gland of your immune system. And so in your bone marrow, you have these highly specialized cells called stem cells. And stem cells, they are more than willing to manufacture white blood cells for you. This is your active, living, breathing immune system, folks. And so what happens is these B cells, or bone marrow cells, white blood cells, they travel from your bone marrow, and the first place that they go for their visit in the body is the thymus gland. And so the thymus gland does this amazing transformation of these white blood cells from your bone marrow, and then it converts them into what are called T cells. And so T cells are one of the most intriguing white blood cells in the body. You could almost plot a graph across the board with every human being that's living and breathing. When you've got the right balance of T cells, you have got radiant health, and you tend to be more resilient. And infections do not get you down like it might, say, somebody else. And so, when your T cells are compromised, these are people that are going to develop problems when it comes to infections, even autoimmune issues, but that's not the topic of the day. So here's what they did, and this number has got to be wrong. I think it's 20 milligrams. After just 1 month of giving zinc 20 milligrams, the size of the thymus gland, it went from being involuted and atrophied and shrinking, it normalized in 1 month. Whereas those that did not the children that didn't receive the zinc, it took them 2 months for it to come back to its normal size. You know what a buddy of mine told me Sunday? We were talking about this Candida auris infection, and he quickly popped off. He's very, very clever, which I like that about him. At least he can, you know, one thing I like about him is he can think for himself, and he can take information and try to decide, what am I going to believe here? Am I going to believe what these people are telling me, or these? And so that's where wisdom comes in. You have got to decide for yourself what to do. But he said, well, I bet you they haven't tried garlic. I said, you are absolutely right. And so I try to look this up for you. There's a substance that's found unique to garlic. It's called allicin, A-L-L-I-C-I-N, which this is one of the most potent active ingredients that's found in crushed garlic. So if you go out in the garden today and you grab a bulb of garlic and you pop a clove out and you crush it, then what you do is you release the enzymes that generate the production of a substance called allicin, which some people don't dig that I understand. I just nearly found myself laughing like crazy yesterday morning. A son was telling me that his mother makes absolutely the hottest hot sauce. And so when people come over the house to eat with him, everybody uses a very small amount of it instead of a large amount because the stuff is so hot. And so there is an extremely common pharmaceutical drug called fluconazole. Sometimes it's called Diflucan. If I have seen one person that's been prescribed this drug for 6 months to a year, I've seen 100 probably. I don't think that's I don't think that's too much of an exaggeration. Anyway, that's just like loose information. But this is the drug that the medical community is going to use to treat a fungal infection. Now, if this is failing to overcome these Candida auris infections in the hospitals and nursing homes, well, what do they use? Well, the next drug of choice they're going to use is called amphotericin B. I think that's right. Amphotericin B. Well, they found out that this drug works so much better to treat fungal infections when they combine it with allicin. And where does allicin come from? It comes from garlic. I started to read this to you, but that's just too much. Let me tell you what I'm looking at, though. Have you ever heard of a Petri dish? These are glass dishes where they put this nutrient agar substance, and they can swab it with a loop. So if somebody wants to get a swabbing of the back of their throat, or they take a blood sample or a urine sample, this is where the hospital has a microbiology lab, and they're trying to figure out, what is the name of this bacteria or fungus that's wrecking the health of this person? And so they'll use that. And what they have is they have two things. They have the substance that has the greatest antifungal properties is garlic. There is a fat-soluble vitamin known as vitamin D3, cholecalciferol. Obviously, if a person's sick in intensive care, they are nowhere near a window with sunshine coming in, and the sun is not touching their arms or their shoulders or their face or their neck or their legs. It's just not happening. And I was telling a woman yesterday, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. I'm almost positive it goes by the name cathelcedin. Well, there is an antibiotic that your body completely is able to manufacture on its own. It's very potent. I'm positive it's called cathelcedin. But if I get that wrong, I can look it up and try to correct that for you. But that's completely dependent on the amount of vitamin D that a person has in their system. And if you're sick with an infection, you're probably in a dark room, or you're in a room with no sunlight. I think I've only had about 5 people try to call to get in, so let's go ahead and go to the phone line. So what can we learn today? We've learned so far that the antifungal drugs are just about doing nothing to treat this growing infection that's taking over hospitals. It's called Candida auris. I will try to give you more information in time, but is there any harm in me giving you information about the use of vitamin D3 to help sequentially upregulate your immune system so it can just do a better job of taking care of itself? Or zinc or garlic. Just consider those, folks. Good morning and welcome to the program. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Good morning.
You're welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. Hope you don't get a bunch of feedback here.
As long as you turn your radio off, it'll go away.
Okay. All right, that's what I've done.
Good. Thanks, buddy.
Okay. Oh, no problem. I travel back and forth to Fort Worth, to Houston every day, and I listen to your program on Saturday mornings whenever I get a chance to, and hopefully sometimes I can get a feed, sometimes I can't. But my question to you, my wife has Crohn's disease. And she has been on Remicade, she's been on Humira, she's been on all sorts of stuff, and it just doesn't seem to help. It did help in the beginning, the Humira.
Yeah.
But after she felt like she was better, she just didn't want to go back for the injections anymore because she just was tired.
But now it's gotten
to the point to where none of this stuff is helping her out.
Well, see, that was the very thing I was fixing to ask you. I mean, from your opinion, do you just feel like or observe that those drugs just are not working the way they used to on her body?
No, they're not. I think her body's rejecting them now. I'm trying to find some natural way to go about
those two drugs right there, Remicade and Humira. To the best of my knowledge, their mode of action is they try to block the expression of what's called tumor necrosis factor alpha. I'm sure you really want to know the information today. Sorry about that. But your white blood cells, what they do is they carry this protein around called tumor necrosis factor alpha, and they release it when they feel like the body's under attack. Let me give you an example. If you had come in contact, like at a nursing home, with a whole bunch of people that had influenza or the flu, and you gave them a hug and a kiss, probably not a good idea, but you know, you love them, so you did it anyway, and all of a sudden you start feeling chills, and you've got a fever, and your body hurts, and it doesn't hurt a little bit. You are achy and sore all over. Well, you'd probably come to the conclusion, sweetheart, I think I have the flu. I better be quarantined to the spare bedroom or something. Well, to me, that's a pretty good example of what does your body do when it releases a boatload of tumor necrosis factor alpha. Well, you feel horrible all over, and this is pretty common if somebody that has an autoimmune disease like lupus or Sjogren's syndrome or rheumatoid, or if it manifests in the large intestine, that'd be Crohn's disease, and that's what you're talking about with your wife. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is not to wear you out with details, but I just want you to think through this, or I want to give you a different take on this. Okay. It has been proven over and over again that your immune system can go bonkers and release way too much tumor necrosis factor alpha in the presence of an infection. And so is it okay if I just suggest that maybe one of the issues that your wife has, it's just never been kind of pursued or expounded upon, what if she has like a low-grade viral infection? And no one's ever pursued that. I mean, for all I know, she's been to the doctor, and the doctor says, why don't we check you for cytomegalovirus or Epstein-Barr or one of those viral entities that's associated with chronic fatigue syndrome, something like that. Well, if her blood work comes back and it shows that she has high titers, I'd say, bingo. Well, what can we do with that? We've got to find a way to get the body to clean house and get rid of those viruses. And so that's just one idea. I know that's pretty simplistic, but do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no, I do. I understand. She wants to sleep all the time.
This
is a person that used to be active her whole life until about 17 years ago.
Could you tell her that I really feel badly for her and I'm very sympathetic and I want to be of help? So that's one thing that I'm going to put on the, I'm going to put that up there at number one. We have got to determine if she has some type of a low-grade viral entity. And then the question that we get from that is, well, what do we do about it? And there's only probably two, you know, simple responses. Either we give the body something to kill it, like an antiviral, or we try to upregulate the immune system where her body can actually do a much better job of trying to clean house on its own. There's lots of ways of doing that. And let me go on to point number two real quick. And I know this is going to sound simple, but I see this over and over and over with Crohn's disease. I mean, if I've seen this once, I've seen it 300 times. These individuals, most likely, they have a condition called a hyperpermeable gut or a leaky gut. Have you ever heard that term before?
Yes, I have.
Does that like ring a bell, like that might be something that she may have to contend with?
It might be, yes.
Well, then let me say it this way. If the very cells that line your colon, which I think you and I are going to agree on the radio this morning, that the largest concentration of your immune system is found right in the gut. It is in the gut. And so if the lining of the gut is inflamed, and if it's beat up, if it's not nice tight junctions like it should be between the cells, then what can happen is your wife could eat just a normal meal. It could be asparagus with butter. It could be, ramen noodles, something like that. But if she has an inflamed gut, some of those undigested food particles are just going to squeeze through or fit through those wide junctions between the cells. And what happens when those get into the bloodstream? Your body has no choice but to start generating and producing antibodies against those undigested foods. And so, like with Crohn's disease, if I had to... Can I just choose three foods off the top of my head that I see over and over again? I see wheat and dairy and corn keep lighting up over and over again. See, I don't really think my job is that hard. Here's the most difficult question I have to ask a person after about 3 weeks. Ma'am, have your symptoms gotten better once you've kind of cut out corn or wheat or dairy? If that's actually her deal. And if she says yes, then I completely believe her on every level. Now, another thing that I want to... Because I want to be helpful to your wife. Have you heard of colostrum before?
Colostrum?
Yeah.
No.
Well, look, were you raised on a farm?
I was out in the country for a few years, but no, not to say that I was a true country boy, no.
Well, let me give you some advice. Do not turn your back on a rooster or a goat. Don't do it. Just keep your eyes...
It's funny you said that. I did have those whenever I did live out in the country, and you're right. You never turned your back on them.
Or turkey.
Yeah, turkey too. Yeah.
When a mama cow or a mama horse, that didn't sound right, but when a cow gives birth to a calf, you've got this window where maybe 1 to 3 hours after the baby calf is born, mama is producing colostrum at such high levels, it's unbelievable. So it's not really milk, but it's that very, very first food that the calf gives. And I don't know if you've heard this before, but have you ever heard the name Dr. Jonas Salk and Dr. Sabin? Well, those dudes won the Nobel Prize for coming up with the polio vaccine. And I know that we're seeing this less and less, but I'm pretty sure that you have been in public before, or maybe a church, or a family member, and you've seen one limb on their body, whether it's a leg or an arm, it is severely atrophied on one side, skinny as a rail. And that would be one version of, polio. Well, those days are just about over, but the way they discovered the polio vaccine, or the cure for polio, is they were looking at cow colostrum under a microscope. I just think this is so cool. And so Dr. Salk said, "Oh, my word. Come take a look at this, Dr. Sabin. We're looking at cow colostrum that comes from like a mama cow that just gave birth to a baby. And the cow colostrum has antibodies against polio virus." And see, that's one thing that you find in colostrum. It contains a naturally high concentration of a substance called lactoferrin. I don't even know if you've heard the term lactoferrin. But this stuff has been shown to kill just about any virus it comes in contact with. But the reason why I was mentioning colostrum is because when a baby calf is born, or a little, you know, cute, adorable baby human being, they have what's called a hyperpermeable gut. And I could probably scour, if you gave me about 30 minutes, I bet you anything I could come up with at least 5 really, really good articles showing that when a person has a chronic condition of their immune system where the body starts to turn on itself, and that's Crohn's disease, you're going to find that they probably have a significantly hyperpermeable gut or a leaky gut, and that's probably where the term leaky gut syndrome. But I the more that I study this, I just think this is one topic we cannot overlook. We have to throw the full weight of our energy behind helping your wife's gut heal. And so part of that might be, why don't we just get rid of all the infections of the body? And there's ways of doing that. Number two, if she does have some type of an allergy, have you ever heard of a substance called monosodium glutamate?
No, I have not.
It's a food additive. It's a chemical they add to fast food to try to trick your body into thinking it tastes better. No, I'm sorry. It probably tricks your body into thinking, hey, this is the highest quality chicken sandwich I've ever had in my life. When in reality, it's probably not great quality, but if they add this chemical to it, it kind of fools your taste buds into thinking it has more flavor than what it really does. I think that when you were a boy growing up, if your mother made a bowl of soup and you said, "Mom, this is the best soup of all time," there's like a pretty good chance it's because she put real ingredients in it and it had, you know how soup is. It's kind of complicated, but it just tastes great.
Yeah.
You just get a blend of all these things like zucchini and onions and garlic and... Yeah, just all those good things, just a blend of all of them. But you get this nutrient-dense substance called soup. And it's very, you know, it doesn't have a lot of calories, but it's just really rich in nutrients. And usually the more rich a food has in nutrients, or the riches in nutrition, the better it tastes. But when food is of a very poor quality, you could take a bite of it and say, "Dude, this is so bland. Where's the flavor? Hand me some MSG." Right. I'm just joking about that.
Yeah.
But I've seen people consume MSG, and if they have a leaky gut, this stuff passes right in the bloodstream. I always think it goes right to the brain. And sometimes it's called an excitotoxin, but you can have people that can think clearly. But you give them MSG, oh, buddy, they develop migraine headaches. They have seizures, or can. That's what I should say, they can. But that's really going back to what my recommendations are for your lovely wife, is what can we do to determine what her food intolerances or chemical intolerances are, and just avoiding those. I know that's an oversimplification, but sometimes you got to have a starting place, and that is a starting place, is identifying what could be the trigger or the culprit. You know who Superman is, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've never met him personally. So. But what is the substance they put near him to weaken him? Isn't that kryptonite?
It's kryptonite, yeah.
Well, so we got to find out what your wife's kryptonite is. And if that's like a continual low-grade infection, we got to name and claim that and say, okay, this is what
I can tell you one thing I know that's triggered is wine.
Wine?
Wine.
What does it do?
It triggers her where she just has that bowel sinking, and the next thing you know, she's...
Oh, my goodness.
She starts having flare-ups and things like that. But she still, I mean, she likes wine, but...
Well,
she's not an everyday drinker of wine, but when she does, it's, you might just forget it.
Now, I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
It just acts,
but clears it up. Yeah, but you've seen that over and over, haven't you?
Right.
Yeah, so you're saying, okay, cause and effect here. Drinking wine and a flare-up, right? Two go hand in hand. Do you know how many ounces it takes to kind of do that? Is it like 25.3 ounces or is it less?
Yeah.
I was really joking about the 25 ounces.
It's probably about two glasses or so.
Because you could actually go in the store and you could look at the wine bottle and it'd say 23, what does it say, like 750 milliliters, something like that?
Right.
I'm not on the metric system, so I don't know. Now, does it particularly, is it one form? Is it white or red?
It's the sweet ones. It's like
the one
like,
called
like
Moscato,
sangria and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you, you were talking to the guy that knows nothing about wine other than what I read about it. There is a compound.
She's from Argentina too.
She's from where?
Argentina, from the wine country.
Does
Mendoza.
This mean you're fluent in Spanish?
No, I wish I was. She's the one that is, not me. I can't speak a lick of it. I have
well,
to
how
my
about if you? How about if you pay her like a dollar a day to teach you?
I couldn't pay her $100 a day to teach me.
You mean that's not your gift? You don't have the Spanish-speaking gene?
No, my mom does, but...
Your mom really does?
Yeah,
well, why is it that your mom speaks Spanish? Is she from Argentina also?
No. My mom was born in Mexico, but she lives over here now. But no, they never taught me that.
Well,
and everybody says, and you're what? I said, well, hey, I can't help it. They didn't teach me.
Well, here's what we're left with. And I realize I'm not giving you everything because it's like an overwhelming topic. But I need your wife to consider that she's got a hyperpermeable gut. And colostrum is one of the greatest solutions of all time. See, what I don't want to do is I don't want to just sit here and say, oh, I guarantee you this will work or that will work. But mm-hmm. we can completely start the process of transformation where she's just transformed to being like in a hyper inflamed autoimmune state where we can just calm this down. And I think it's very reasonable for me to suggest to your wife that what we've got to do is we've got to get the immune system into remission, which means it's no longer pumping out all these pro-inflammatory chemicals like cytokines and leukotrienes and inflammation. But you can bet your butt, whatever the wine does to her, I'm not saying I know, but it is generating inflammation or inflammatory response. Maybe it's mm-hmm. the alcohol content. I mean, alcohol has truly been shown to, like, wreck the lining of the gut in some people more than others.
Right.
But I want you to look in. I want you to do you ever go on the computer to look things up?
I do.
I think if you went on YouTube today and just typed in colostrum and Crohn's disease, I'm not saying there's a video that exists. I just think that I know YouTube well enough that there's probably 20 to look at. But just let her listen to that, even if she's having a bad day today. But we've got to have a way where we can establish a new, even if it's just very small habits, what can we do to move her toward healing and repair where she feels like $1 million? I mean, she did not feel poorly in Argentina, did she?
No. You know what? She didn't have any flare-ups over there, even though she was drinking wine and whatnot. But
well, it was wine from Argentina.
Yeah, well, it's good wine.
Well,
good.
Anyway, but I sure hope I've helped you today.
You have. Let me ask you now, if she tries this and it does work, I'd probably suggest to her maybe to start weaning off of that Remicade and stuff like that. She's going in there for something.
I think she should probably get on her knees and say, thank you, Lord, first, and then we'll... But, see, I cannot legally tell you to tell your wife to come off Remicade, but that's the very thing that you started with this morning, is it is no longer working on a level like it used to. It's just... And so, forgive me for saying this. I'm trying not to be overly blunt. I do not see that as a long-term solution for your wife.
I don't either, because I know there's awful side effects. It causes all this other...
When you look at the studies on...
and everything else.
Exactly. When you look at the long-term studies on Remicade and Humira at the 20-year mark, and I'm not going to say it because I don't want to be negative, but it didn't work out in a pretty fashion. It's just not pretty.
Right. And she knows that, too.
Well, there will definitely be a compromise of her immune system. And so as long as your wife is living and breathing, there is hope. She can move in a different direction. But it's going to take, how in the book of Romans it says faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God?
Mm-hmm.
I am completely convinced, whether it's me or you or somebody else, sometimes you just have to hear like a little bit different take or a different, you know, spin on the topic. Like, are you kidding me? You mean this whole time that's the only thing that the GI doctor's given my wife is just saying, well, you're going to be on Remicade and Humira the rest of your life. Well, you know, God has designed the body to heal itself. And if you hear that maybe there's a food allergy we need to address, or a low-grade infection, or there's a substance such as colostrum that could actually help heal the immune system, then you go, you know what? We've given it a fair shot. We've tried everything that they've kind of thrown our way. That probably wasn't the right way to say it. They didn't really throw them your way, but you know what I mean. They wrote a prescription.
Yes, I do.
Actually, I'm going to go back. They threw it her way. But if she's tried that and they're ceasing to work, then she needs to kind of take a step back and say, okay, this ain't working. What else can I do? Because I've already tried what they've told me, and it is failing me. And I can hear it in your voice. You love her.
Oh, yeah.
You're totally devoted to her on every level.
Pain.
Oh, well. Well, you're the best husband of all time. I'm giving you an A+ on your report card today for awesomeness.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, and so
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, buddy. But that second question you asked me at the end, that can be resolved. But I think it's going to be one that you're gonna be able to answer pretty quickly. And I think you already know the answer to it.
Yep, because you were so right about what you said at the end there. They say this is what you've gone through at least 20 years of your life. And that's what I don't want to be, because after that, I know it probably won't work for sure.
If we can just take a step back and look at this without too many emotions here, because sometimes the emotion card is played like, do you love your wife? If you love her, you'll make her take this drug. And I'm going, well, that's just not necessarily, you know, a fair narrative. But
right.
If we could just take a step back and say, okay, I am just tired of feeling horrible. What am I going to do about this? And so I didn't even scratch the surface. You've got a whole bunch of more options. But right now, we got to get rid of the inflammation. And I think it's completely possible and doable. So I am rooting for you. I am really, really rooting for you, or for your wife and you.
Oh, well, thank you. And I do appreciate that. And, you know, I've tried to call your program. I tried calling it last year, and I left a message, but nobody ever got back to me, but I'm so glad I was able to get a hold of you today.
Oh, I'm glad you did, too.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm just honored that you called. Thank you very much. I hope you have a good day. Give my very best to your wife, all right?
I sure will. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right. God bless you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
If you haven't heard this program before, this is Health Essentials. I'm Dr. Roy Morgan. And I would be happy to assist you any way that I can. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I think that's the first time I've given out the phone number. Sorry. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'm calling for my son. He's 25 years old. And just to give you a brief background, he had appendicitis about a year ago. And then he started having some upper right abdominal pain, and it came out to be,
now, did they
a HIDA scan.
Did he get over the appendicitis without surgery?
No, they
took it out. Okay. All right. I just wanted to be clear about that. Sorry to interrupt you. So they did it. They do an appendectomy then?
Yes.
Okay. I'm with you now. You said HIDA scan. We're talking about gallbladder now. So.
Exactly. And they did the HIDA scan because he started having upper right abdominal pain, and it showed the ejection fraction was 20%, so it was low.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, since that time, he just, you know, isn't feeling that well, and he's concerned and everything with his age, but recently, it's like he started kind of having irritable bowel symptoms, like, you know, eat something and then have to rush to the bathroom. And
oh, bless his heart.
They did an EGD. Yeah. They did an EGD, upper scope, and he does have some inflammation in the stomach, gastritis kind of thing. He does dip tobacco, unfortunately.
That evil,
so I know,
evil child.
Yeah.
I'm joking. Yeah. That's a joke.
Anyway, so then he did the spit test. He's smart and he does his research. And it showed, you know, the spit stringy down, you know, and which indicates candida.
Yeah, you're not talking about a medical test at doctor's office. You're talking about like a home test because you're trying to get information.
Exactly.
And I'm all for that. I think I think he's brilliant.
Yes, he is. So he got, it's called 1MD Candida something or other. And anyway, it looks like a good product that has aloe vera, probiotics, and enzymes, stomach enzymes.
Oh, I'm on board.
So, yeah, he's doing that.
I mean, this is what you call a positive step in the right direction.
Yeah. And he just wanted me to call you and just see, is there any other ideas that you have about, you know, because irritable bowel, they just go by symptoms. It's not anything you can.
Oh, totally.
You know.
Totally. Let me, all right, I'm trying to find a simple way to start here, but let me have a go at this. The appendix is really your tremendous reservoir of probiotics or beneficial bacteria. And so when your body has a crisis of any kind, whether it's the flu or strep throat or, you know, you eat food that's tainted and you have like a touch of food poisoning or diarrhea. I know that's not like a pleasant topic on a Saturday morning, but, you know, people and that happens. Or you get a stomach bug.
Mm-hmm.
That's where your appendix comes into. It kind of contracts and it pushes out all these reserves of bacteria. It's like calling the National Guard, you know, to the border when there's like a crisis or something. Like, get down there and help protect us. And so let me put that thought on hold for just a second. Let me jump up to the gallbladder if I can. One of the most important things that your gallbladder or the biliary tree and the substance that it secretes called bile does, it keeps a person free from infections. And so I realize it's kind of like a bizarre thing to tell you, but if you have plenty of high-quality bile, it keeps your gut in great working order. It is not the only player, but it's essential. Why would God ban it if it weren't important? I know there's a I know there's opinion that there's all these organs that aren't important. Baloney. I'm not buying that. If we were born with a spleen, we must need it, or tonsils, or a thyroid. So the thing that I always find over and over and over again is there's probably some type of a hidden allergy if that gallbladder is sluggish and it ain't working right. And so I had a I hope she's not listening right now. Actually, let me tone down what I was going to say. I had a woman come see me very recently, and she is so sweet. Her husband is like adorable. I've told him that I'm jealous of his beard, but that's a topic for another day. I can't grow a beard like that. Is it wrong for me to be jealous of another man's beard? Probably. Anyway. But when I examined her, the substance that seemed to be setting that gallbladder off or keep it from working right was MSG. And I tell you what, she is completely transformed since she's gotten off MSG. This is just one thing. I think she told me this week that she's lost like 26 pounds. And in my mind, I'm thinking, look at what the body is able to let go of and get rid of and just unburden itself. And so she's making great, great progress. But let me go to the topic of tobacco just for a second. And I am not trying to be, you know, the monkey wrench in the works here. I'm not calling, I am not saying anything to him to be judgmental. I love him. He's perfect. We just need to find a way to get him in better working order. But there is a family of, I'm going to say, fruits and vegetables and food substances called the Solanaceae family. Sometimes those are called nightshades. You ever heard that before?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And here's, and I'm probably totally wrong on this, but I guarantee you, I see probably maybe one to two persons, individuals a year, that is their deal and that is their only deal. They just have an intolerance to nightshades. And so nightshades are going to be things like tomatoes, and you've got white potatoes, and you've got every conceivable pepper, which that would make me sad because I love peppers. Did I tell you the other day I went to the little Hispanic deli called Super Gallo here in Jacksonville? And they have a deli there, and I knew it was a poor choice on my part, but a person dared me to eat one of those large jalapenos. And what am I supposed to do? What would you do? You would take that bet, wouldn't you?
Yep.
But I ate it, and I had just about every Hispanic gentleman and lady in the restaurant looking at me, laughing at me nonstop. Now, I'm not saying that I was crying for a long time, but it was probably, 10 minutes maybe. But it was horrible.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't. But, I was challenged by an individual that I won't name, but he's done this to me many times, and you would think I'd learn by now, but you've got peppers, but there's also tobacco. I think there's goji berries, eggplants. But sometimes the digestive tract starts to get really burdened, and tobacco's a member of that family. So I don't know the answer to this. I just know that we want to help your son. So you tell me, what is the greatest thing that we can accomplish with your son right now? What is the number one thing he needs to know?
Well, just improving, overall. He went on, when they did the EGD, and they didn't really, to me, they found gastritis. That is something.
Yeah.
Like it was nothing. And they told him to take Dexia, which he was taking 2 a day, and I told him, I said, that's not good. That alters your digestion. It keeps you from absorbing your nutrients and all that kind of thing. And he knows it, but then again, he's scared that he's going to start feeling bad again. Well, so he went down to 1 a day, thank goodness, after he got this 1MD candida thing. Anyway, so he knows eventually he needs to get off of it because that's what Mom wants him to do. I don't like this at all.
No, I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying.
And I told him, I think the tobacco is a very big factor in this situation.
Well, one thing that tobacco can do in the form of chewing tobacco and such, it causes that cardiac sphincter to weaken, where the contents of your stomach and all its acids, it starts to go the wrong direction. It moves upward. But it can literally start burning the lining of your esophagus and everything else, and, reflux and all that jazz. I do have a sales pitch for your son, though.
What?
Do you think that we could talk him into eating one small organic apple a day? Like if he went to the store and bought a bag of Pink Ladies or Gala apples. I like Gala apples. I just think they taste good. Of course, that's the only one they have that's organic, so I'll buy it. But so if they had 10 other ones. I love Fuji's. If he could eat one apple a day, that has been shown to tremendously alter the good beneficial flora that lie in his stomach and his gut. And he needs that since he doesn't have an appendix. And so an apple a day, if he could have a half a cup of blueberries, because both these foods right here in studies, I read them this morning before I came on the air. Actually, you don't see my sheet of paper that I have in front of me where I scribble everything on there. But that's just, some people think that way, and that's the way that I think. I got to scribble it down. But I wrote down apples and blueberries in two medical studies. They have been shown to increase what's called butyrate levels. Butyrate will calm down all the inflammation in his gut, and that's what he needs right now. And so what is the food that has the most butyrate in it? It's butter. And so if your son loves to drink a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, actually I had a lady shoot me down on this yesterday, and I am not offended, but she did shoot me down. I said, what do you think about putting a pat of butter in your tea? And she said, that is just the most repulsive thing of all time. Have you ever tried that before?
I haven't, actually.
You ought to try it. I mean, are you offended by the idea of taking butter and putting it on your asparagus?
No.
Neither am I. A lady gave me 4 raw, she just cut them, asparagus shoots yesterday. What do you think I did with them?
You could cut those up and put them on a salad.
I just ate them raw. I mean, they were delicious.
Just ate them raw,
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they were divine. But if we could change the dynamics of your son's stomach, and I'm just saying, this is not the first time you've heard the phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. You've heard that maybe once or twice, right?
Yes.
But if he could do that, that would make a difference. But usually with gastritis, I'm trying to greatly reduce refined carbohydrates, and so that's going to be grains usually and sugar. But, I mean, your son is really smart, and he's open to this, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
What if all he did was eat an apple a day, some blueberries, avoid junk food, and take some probiotics every day as a supplement? Mm-hmm. He can become completely transformed, and you could say, son, I haven't heard you complain about your stomach in a long time. He says, that's because there's nothing to talk about, Mom. I feel great. That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Without Nexium.
Yeah. And see, the reason I'm not a fan of Nexium is the same reason you're not a fan also, is because over time it blocks the absorption of nutrients. And how has your son become stronger and more fulfilled in life when he's becoming more depleted in nutrition? Even if somebody has never been taught this topic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, please go ahead. He knows what?
He knows it blocks absorption, and he knows that he is feeling the effects of lack of nutrients.
So he's starting to maybe suffer a little bit with his performance at work and stuff like that.
I mean, I think he's coping okay.
But he just doesn't feel as good as he used to. So. He is a policeman?
Exactly.
Which area does he work? That way I can drive through at 100 miles an hour and he'll give me a free get-out-of-jail pass.
Quitman PD.
Awesome. I drove through Quitman the other day.
Yeah.
But it wasn't 100 miles an hour. I was going the speed limit.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's great. I'm sure I would really, really like your son a lot, wouldn't I?
Yes.
Does everybody love him?
Yes.
Do you worry about him?
I do, because I want him to be healthy. He's only 25 and, you know,
25,
has a long life to live.
That's right. Lord willing, yes.
That's right. So I will let him know what you said, and I appreciate your help with this.
Could you handcuff him to the kitchen countertop first before you tell him these things? That way he can't run from you? No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
No, I wish you the very best, and tell him I am really pulling for him, and I think that he can do this. He just needs to say, all right, I'm going to start drinking water, I'm going to eat apples and blueberries, and I'm going to cut out junk food, which I don't know that I've ever heard of a police officer eating junk food, but there's a rumor going around that they do like donuts, except for your son.
I don't think he eats donuts.
Well, you trained him well. Way to go. But thank you for your phone call, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Please join me next week. This program is Health Essentials. You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview.